Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I bet you forgot that I was even putting these out. It's been a while. And I even forgot how to hook up the mic. So I was gone for a while because of C2E2, which was in Chicago. It was our first time attending there. And it was a good con. It was if I had to compare it to any other cons I've been to, I would compare it to Denver Comic Con. To me, it's about the same size, roughly. Yeah, it's about the same size. They have about the same amount of celebrities. It's about the exact same size. It's sort of the exact same format. They have a good artist alley. They have a lot of vendors, and they have a lot of panels. So they're very similar. A matter of fact, the only thing that's different is at Denver Comic Con, I don't have a lot of friends to meet up with, and in Chicago, I did. The reason I went to Chicago, there's two reasons. One reason is, man, work is driving me crazy and I needed to get away. I needed a week earlier than rather than later. The other reason is it was a chance to meet a lot of people that don't go to Heroes or Baltimore Comic Con, specifically the Nerdy Legion guys and some comic book page people. That those are the podcasts that I listen to and participate in, and wanted to meet those guys, and I also wanted to meet the guys at Cowabunga. So that was the primary reason I went there. I didn't even look at like what panels were going on until the day of, and I didn't look at what creators were going to be there, so I didn't take any materials to be signed. I had no plans on buying any art. Some really loose plans on buying comic books. I knew that I was going to be focused on the Golden Age, and I was highly probable to be focused on Captain Marvel, Shazam specifically, not the Marvel Captain Marvel, and police comics or anything with the Black Terror in it. And we'll talk about what I ended up picking up there. The other thing that we wanted to do was get there early, hopefully have good weather so that we could see some sights, because me and Barb had never been to Chicago. And for the most part, the weather held up. I mean, it was cold. We had heavy jackets a lot, but no worse than what we're used to in Colorado. It was windy, but we've had that kind of weather here. Even though that the lake is right there and you get like a cool breeze off the lake. So we did a lot of walking. We were about 3, 4 miles away from stuff. So we were walking about 8 miles a day, typically. And we did walk every day except for Thursday. Or maybe it was Friday. No, Thursday we went to Sears Tower and we took a Uber. And it was the first time we had ever took an Uber anywhere. And we took an Uber from a certain location to the Sears Tower. And then we also took an Uber on Saturday to go to the Navy Pier, which we had on our list. The one thing that we didn't get to do that we wanted to do was take one of the boat rides that they had, and mostly because of weather. It was too cold, and the one day that it was sort of warm, we just left sort of late from the con and got to the Navy Pier to eat, and the ride there was half hour there and half hour back to go. I bet you if we walked, we would have beat the ride. I'm pretty confident that if we walked, we would have beat the ride. But it was a long walk to the Navy Pier. But that's how slow it is. It's like you were in traffic and you could see somebody like walking just passing you. And I don't know how those guys do it, like with the Uber, because I just get frustrated. It just stop, go. And then a lot of tourists in the area are waiting for Uber. So you have all this traffic jam, and I don't know, it was ugly, especially on the day that we had some sunshine and the weather was probably the best on Saturday. I think it was Saturday that we went out. So on Monday we got there really late. On Tuesday we went to the aquarium, which was probably my favorite sight. We've been to the Baltimore Aquarium and we've been to the Denver Aquarium, and I think those are the two aquariums we've been to. And the Balt I mean the this aquarium was the best. They had like the beluga whales. I think that's how you say it. Beluga whales. They're all white and they have like a weird humpback on them, and they almost look like a huge dolphin. I mean, kind of. But that was pretty fascinating. And then the other thing they had that was really cool is we spent a lot of time watching the penguins, which were pretty awesome. And there's a lot of fish and reptiles and all kinds of good stuff. And they had a 4D movie presentation about sardines. And that was pretty fascinating. And it was called 4D because the chairs have like things on them to simulate wind. It rains on you, so when something splashes, you get splashed with water. Various things like that. Wind, looked like leaves were blowing, and then it's in a 3D perspective. And it was a really cool movie because it was like a circle of life, like this eating that, eating this, eating that kind of thing. But everything was eating the sardines. It started with the dolphins eating the sardines, and then a certain type of bird would go after the sardines, and then that would attract the sharks, and the sharks would go after the sardines. And then ultimately, it led to the whales going after the sardines, which was really cool. And that day we had some Chicago dogs that were really good. I only had one, but it was delicious. And I think that day we had our first pizza, Chicago style pizza that was really a Chicago style pizza, which was amazing. That was the best one because we ate there twice at Giordano's, and the first time we had toppings more to my liking. It was just simple. It was the main thick pizza, which had tons of mozzarella with just pepperoni. It was absolutely delicious, and we had the calamari, and it was pretty awesome. I think the next day we went by Soldier Field, and we went to the Field Museum, which was like a museum of natural history. And the highlights there, I mean, I've always liked museums, but the highlights there for me was the mummy exhibits. They had a newer mummy exhibit, which was pretty fascinating about how they had burials in different cultures, and how they would make some of these tombs. They would show like drawings of how they would make it. The thing I found most fascinating for me personally was reading excerpts from the Book of the Dead. I thought it was pretty amazing because it was like the Egyptian 10 Commandments, but it was way more than 10, and it was sort of how to lead a good life to pass on to the next life. And I found it fascinating because of how similar those things were. Pretty amazing. And then they had like an interesting thing of like how back in the day, the different ways you could become a pharaoh, which I thought was fascinating. So that was really awesome. And then the other exhibit that really blew my mind was the T-Rex, which was called Sue. And this particular T-Rex was the largest find of a T-Rex with most of the bones in place. Like they had almost everything in place. And the display was amazing. They had it, the fossils there in a really cool light presentation with Sue. And then they had Sue's actual head wasn't on the fossil because there's a lot of scientists that are observing this fossil and doing research on it to learn a lot more. So that was in another case, and that was pretty amazing. And the other thing that was pretty cool is it's usually these when these types of animals die, the bones are scattered and such because scavengers will scavenge the bones and such. But they said that Sue probably died of starvation because of an infection, like eating like infected meat. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. So we learned a lot, and we had a blast. The next day we went to the planetarium, which was a lot of fun. There were a lot of people there at the planetarium that day. I think that was Wednesday. And then we went to Sears Tower, which I forgot what the regular tower was called. It's no longer Sears Tower. But they have an observation deck where you go up on the highest area and they have like a glass floor in a certain, and you look down and you could see like all of Chicago. And we got some good pictures from up there. So we had a blast. And then we, like I said, on Saturday we did the Navy Pier where we ate there. We had the worst waiter ever. But it was like something out of Seinfeld. It was really weird. It's like he would not acknowledge us like we were there. He was very single-threaded, and it's almost like they pulled him out of the cooking area and said, "Because we're so busy, you have to go wait tables." And it's like he never waited tables before. It was really weird. But anyway, we went on the Ferris wheel, which was very cool, especially because it was in the Ferris wheel's inside, like cabs, if you will, instead of outside cabs. So that was really cool. So we did a lot of tourist thing, and then the con day. Friday was probably the best day, Friday and Saturday. But Friday's the best. If you're gonna go spend time at the con, I highly recommend going on Friday because there's the least amount of people. I guess people are working. Locals, and there's other things going on Friday, and there's just not that much people there, and you can do pretty much anything. Didn't see any panels that day. My objective on Friday was just to meet as many people as possible, and I was able to meet most of Nerdy Legion that day, minus Nick. Couldn't find Nick. Met Nick on Sunday. But I saw Martin, Dwan, Travis, Jim, Ronnie, Baron, a bunch of people, and I got to talk to him for quite a bit, which was a lot of fun. I love those guys, so it's really cool to talk to him. I did see Bill Bear. He's part of the Nerdy Legion now. I had met him before, but with the exception of Martin, I had never met any of those guys. Well, with the ex I lie. Jim, I had met 3 or 4 years ago when I was doing the Valiant podcast, and Justin Ehart invited had a barbecue in Boulder and invited a bunch of Valiant fans, and that's where I met him for the first time. And he was actually sitting at the table, and he was at the con. Now I don't think he lives in Colorado anymore. I think he's in Chicago or somewhere near there. Dwan is in Chicago. Nick is in Chicago. So it was very cool talking to them. One of my favorite highlights of the con was definitely meeting Nerdy Legion and getting to talk to them. Didn't talk to him as much as I would have liked to. I could have talked to him more if I had braved the walking distance to their sort of Airbnb that they were staying at, which was in the danger zone. That's why I didn't go there. There's like parts when you go to Baltimore Comic Con, there's parts of Baltimore that they say don't go past this line. Well, for Nerdy Legion lives dangerously because they went past that line, and that's why I didn't go over there. But I did see him at the cons every day, except for no, I saw him Sunday. I didn't see Ronnie on Sunday, but I did see Nick. No, I saw everybody on Sunday. I forgot that was panel day. So I met everybody that I wanted to from Nerdy Legion, except for Nick, on Friday. And that Friday, no panels. It was kind of like going through Artist Alley row by row by row, even though I missed a bunch of rows because I saw a bunch on Sunday, and it's like I didn't know they existed. But on Saturday, it was a disaster. I went to the con, and it was just too doggone busy. It was ridiculously busy. And oh, I forgot. On Friday, I also got to meet Eric and James of Cowabunga. And I think me and Bill spent, I mean, I spent 12 hours with Bill Bomer, my co-host of Geek Brunch, every day. And I love every minute of it. Bill is family, and of all the people that I've podcasted with over the years, I can say that Bill probably knows me better than anybody, like personally, and I think I've talked to him more hours than anybody, because Geek Brunch is always 3 hours, and it's usually just me and him, so it's like two people just friends talking for 3 hours every other week, which is more than I can say for even my family. I don't talk to my family that much. So hanging out with Bill is always a good time. And I never get t tired of talking with him at all. Like we can talk about anything and talk for hours, and it's like we don't miss a beat. So he's my soul brother, and we got to meet Cowabunga and talk to them, which is really cool because these guys are like us. They're like fans that own a comic shop, and they are. I would encourage you. Like I'll always promote DCBS because that's where I've been since 2006, and I have no reason to leave. But if you have to go somewhere else or you want more customer support, I'd highly recommend going to Cowabunga and their website and starting to do direct orders from them directly. If I wasn't so DCBS, I would have moved to Cowabunga. Matter of fact, they invited us to go to, I think they call it Wakanawak, Wisconsin, which is an hour and a half drive. And I think Dennis and Jay, which I met on Sunday from the Best of the Rest podcast, also on the Nerdy Legion, I think they went to Cowabunga. So they'll probably be talking about that on Best of the Rest podcast. And I saw that Jay got some really good deals on Love and Rockets material, which is his favorite thing. And it was very cool to meet Jay and Dennis. I talked to Jay more than I did Dennis because I met Dennis kind of at a panel, and just got to say hi. Trying to remember everything, but yeah, we got to talk a lot it's about a half hour, 40 minutes. We were supposed to go out to eat, but John Mayo couldn't make it on Saturday or on Friday night, and I don't know how Eric and James ate, but we didn't coordinate like a dinner that night. So I think that night me and Bill just and Barb went to where did we go on Friday? Did we go back to Giordano's? I think so. Yeah, we went back to Giordano's, which we ate earlier the week, and we were supposed to meet Ronnie and everybody from that crew, because they were going to the same, but they went to a different restaurant, and I misunderstood them. I thought they were the closest one to us, and I think they went to another one farther uptown, or closer to their place. But we didn't get to meet up with them, and it was packed that night at that restaurant. We waited like 40 minutes. And then each pizza takes 35 minutes or 30 minutes to cook, so it takes a while. But Saturday was ridiculous, okay? I try to go to Bill had trouble parking his car, so he was late. I decided to go to the con without him just to see if I could walk around and see if I can meet Nick, because I had texted Nick and was it Saturday? I'm so confused with the days that I met Nick. Yeah, I met Nick on Saturday because Saturday was panel day, and because of the crowds, I wanted to go to some panels, and Nick said he was at a certain panel, and I'm like, I can get there, and I tried, but it was half hour just to get through security. So I went at a really bad time, even though it was way past when the con started. But I did get there, and I got to meet Nick at the Top Cow Talent Hunt panel, which was fascinating because they were talking about recommendations for submitting your work. And it was really interesting because another person that I knew on Facebook, Jose, was in the panel, and I didn't always like know what he looked like because his picture profile is usually not him. So he came up and talked to me. Well, I sat down next to Nick and we listened to the whole panel, and then I saw that he got up to answer a question because he submitted as a writer. A submission to Top Cow in the past and had some questions about submitting again. And Matt Hawkins was there, Mark Silvestri, of course, and then there was somebody, Cody, and I've read his work before, or he's an artist, I believe. And the two people that had won previous Top Cow talent hunts. Searches kind of thing. But it was a very good panel. Like I thoroughly enjoyed the panel. Turned out way better than I thought. And I was texting Bill at the time. I was like, you got to be at this panel, 'cause Bill likes to go to the like behind the scenes how to put together comics kind of thing. And this was kind of like that. So he got there like when it was over pretty much. And then we met the rest of Nerdy Legion at the Aftershock panel, which was a lot of fun, even though me and Bill got there extremely late with Nick. But why I had a lot of fun at that panel, because they had like a Q&A, and they were looking for people to ask questions, and I poked my nose into asking a question, but not a question related to Aftershock. Part of it was. So I asked a question. I was like, first I told him I buy all your books sight unseen. Like I go to the solicits. I don't even read them. I just buy everything. from Aftershock. And I said, yeah, I buy all your books. And I said, I would really like you to do some more World War II books or some Westerns. So we kind of got into a little discussion about Westerns and how their sci-fi stuff is kind of Western, but I was like, no, I want true Western. So I put that out there. And then me and Bill were having a ridiculous argument. We had a lot of them over the trip, but we were talking about our favorite ingredients in candy bar. And kind of like in the vein of, what are the top five ingredients in a candy bar? So I asked the entire panel that. And my argument against Bill was that no one would say nougat. Like, no one. That wouldn't be in the Family Feud item. And so we went down the list. First, the lady that she was also in the Top Cow panel, so she wrote for Top Cow and is now writing a book for Aftershock. I can't remember her name, but they went down the list: caramel, chocolate, peanuts, cookie, and I was like, yeah, nobody's selecting nougat. And then we get to the last guy. Well, even before that, before I asked the question. And Martin turned around and told Bill, "Is it nougat?" So like, some pretentious minds think alike. So the guy did say nougat. So I kind of lost that bet because one out of five panelists picked nougat. That was one of those Seinfeld things that I always like to ask ridiculous things at a panel. Like at the Matt Kent one, I was asking him about the foot bath he took with the flesh-eating fish that eat the dead skin off your feet. So, but I try to like ask him when there's not a lot of real questions. But that was fun. And then we were having an argument over the areola, whether it included the nipple. And I didn't ask that in a panel, but I did ask Duan to call his wife, who's in medicine, or she might be a doctor. And sure enough, the aerial doesn't include the nipple, so I lost that bet too. Oh well. It was a fun time. So those are the two panels we went to: Aftershock and the Top Cow panel. And we got to meet Nick, which was awesome. And then that's when we went to the Ferris wheel, which was a lot of fun. And it got us out of the con because it was too busy. It was like a mosh pit. It really was. And on Friday, I kind of scoped out what books I might want to buy, but I didn't buy a lot of books. I bought a handful of books. I only bought the AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Ocasio, is that how you say it? And I call her AOC. They had an exclusive Comic-Con convention special, which this book hasn't even been released yet. And I bought that for myself. And then I had two friends comment on it. And one was Aaron Myers, who always gives me good deals on his books, so I bought him one on the next day. And New Mutant Alan, our friend, he commented that he would want one, so we bought him one. And the other one was Jock. I bought Josh Hickson's Rebel Gun. Me and Bill both bought this one, and he did. Trying to think of the book we just covered. It's the pirate. It's kind of like the woman that comes back. Shanghai Red. He did the art for Shanghai Red. Well, he had this like one shot that looked really awesome, and I was getting ideas for my Kickstarter based on this one because he did a black and white version and a color, and I'm still debating whether what I'm going to be doing. But I picked up those, and then I ran into the guy who does Heroes, who does a Pama and tap dance killer. He owns the company, and I'll get the name of the company because it has Hero in it, but I don't remember what. One of the titles is Apama, the Undiscovered Animal, and his name is Ted Sikora. He writes it with Milo Miller. And this one I've already reviewed it on like Geek Brunch, and I really loved it because it's very rare that you see a DVD inspire a comic. It's usually the other way around. The comic inspires the other types of media. And Apama was before a DVD, so I picked up the DVD. I picked up the second trade in case I was missing issues, 'cause I knew I was, and I wasn't thinking clearly that on my phone I could just go on to DCBS and find out which issues I was missing. But I ended up filling up the on Sunday the remainder of the books that I was missing, which was one issue of Tap Dance Killer and two issues of Apama, the Undiscovered Animal. So now I have the full run of everything plus a trade. So that was pretty cool. And that was pretty much all I bought on day one. Everything else came on Sunday, which was sort of my shopping day. On Sunday we went over, we walked around our Artist Alley. I don't think I bought anything personally, but we did walk around everything to make sure we saw everything. And then actually on Sunday I did go to a panel. Me and Bill went to the Marv Wolfman and George Perez panel. And it was amazing. I don't know if I would have gone to this panel, but it was sort of our meeting point so I could meet John Mayo of the comic book page. So I went to that to meet John Mayo, and I didn't meet him until after the panel was over. But the panel was amazing. They were very complimentary of each other, and it just. These Marv Wolfman and George Perez, they're just class acts. They really are. You can't get much better than that. And they've had great collaborations, especially with the new Teen Titans, and that's where most of the questions were directed. But he was complimentary of the Dracula run. He talked about when Marv was his editor and early on at Marvel, and he was telling him to do certain things, like, and he did things in spite, and it made him a better artist, but it would piss him off because it would be like, draw more backgrounds, do this, do that, and he took his advice and it made him a better artist. And he talked about like how he loves to draw so many heroes in a panel or a comic book to try to get everybody in it. That's like his thing. It's like, why? It's like an opportunity of a lifetime because it's not like you get to draw Batman and Superman, or you get to draw everybody. And that was amazing. And the one question that like I almost teared up on is, and it's a sad realization, but some guy asked, and I don't think he knew about George Perez's condition, like he knew that he was retiring, but he's like, can you come back and take on the JSA? And George said, I really wish I could, but I'm retiring because my eyes, I can't see anymore. And I used to be able to draw 2 pages a day, and now to draw that one page, it would take him 2 weeks because of his sight. And he said it's time to retire. And he says, you know what? I'm blessed. I got to draw everything that I could possibly want. And I'm also blessed because not many creators have enough in royalties to be able to retire. And he says, I'm blessed because I am making more, enough in royalties so I can retire. So it's better that it happened to me than it happened to anybody else. And I was like, oh man, I just love that panel. It was spectacular. I didn't expect it to be because I don't go to a lot of panels, and this one was sort of a magical panel. I really liked it a lot. And me and Bill were there, and then after that we got to meet John Mayo, and we talked about collecting, we talked about some personal things, probably for about 20 to 30 minutes, and that's when we hit the con floor again. And I think at that point in time, I did some shopping. And I actually shopped before that. I went to one guy and I found some Mary Marvels with amazing covers. And I had to have them. And I knew roughly what I was going to spend. So what did I? Oh, the other thing I got on Friday was Neon Future. Had a booth where you can get the first issue for free, which was awesome because I missed the first issue. So I missed the pre-order on it, but I ordered the second. And this was a way for me to get the first, and this was free. All you had to do was scan in your badge and you got that for free. But what I ended up picking up was let's see. I picked up issue 35 of WoW Comics, which has Mary Marvel and Uncle Dudley, Uncle Marvel, and a bunch of heroes, Freckles Marvel, who I've never heard of, and I don't even know these other characters, Mr. Scarlet and Pinky, Commando Yank, and Phantom Eagle. Like Phantom Eagle, I've heard of. And Marvel has a Phantom Eagle, but I guess I'm not aware of the Phantom, I mean the Fawcett Phantom Eagle. And then there's an amazing cover of like a spider web. And this is issue 37 of WoW Comics. And it has the Seventh War Loan by Stamps and Bonds. I always love the War Bonds covers. And this one had it. And it's an amazing cover, and she's like shooting Mary Marvel, and it's the bullets are bouncing off of her. But this woman has a man caught in like a spider web. White covers, they're really good shape covers. I really like them. So the 35 is roughly about a 6.5 to a 7, and the other one is a 3.5. So it's not as good shape, but it looks pretty awesome. The other ones I got it are Mary Marvel. These covers are phenomenal. Mary Marvel number 22. It says the story of the year, the world's mightiest girl in the silver slippers. It's kind of like a Cinderella take, where there's a prince putting on like glass slippers onto Mary Marvel. It is absolutely beautiful. And then we have a Mary Marvel number 23 with a bunch of elves taking supplies out of what looks like Mary Marvel's room. And one of them gives Mary Marvel a kiss, and they're taking her chairs, her mirrors, her grandfather clock, and it says, "The pendulum strikes, thrills, adventures, and laughs, starring the world's mightiest girl." So that was awesome. And then I wanted to get some Captain Marvel Jr., which I have some already, and I ended up getting Master Comics 88. It says, "Introducing Hopalong Cassidy, Captain Marvel Jr., and the Wreckers, and also Bullet Man and Nyoka." I didn't even know Nyoka was Fawcett. That's interesting. This is Master Comics number 88. It's a beautiful cover of a burning building with like a cloud, and Captain Marvel Jr.'s like looking over the situation, and Freddy has his crutch, and he's walking, and a bunch of gangsters are getting ready to shoot him. So We then have another master comic. It's number 71, and it looks like he's fighting an iron Frankenstein welder. And it also has Radar in the upper left-hand corner. The world's most fearless boy meets the man in the metal mask. And they're fighting on top of a high-rise building, and he's like fighting a super welder. So the next two I got were, and these are not cheap, was Captain Marvel Adventures number 10. I mean, sorry, number 104. I wish it was 10. This has Taki Tani in a Shazam outfit smacking up a gangster, and Captain Marvel saying, "Attaboy, Mr. Tani." It says, "In this issue, Captain Marvel and Mr. Tani's Masquerade, the new adventure with the famous Talking Tiger." And then we have Wiz Comics number 63. And this says, "Captain Marvel and the Great Indian Rope Trick." Also has Ibis, Golden Arrow, and Spy Smasher. And it has a guy climbing up a rope and becoming invisible, and he's like, "Holy moly, he's disappearing." And then it has an interesting ad in the left-hand corner, just a small icon that says, you know, "Give to the Red Cross." So these are all from the 40s. Amazing comics. I'm so glad to add them to my collection. And that day after the panel, let's see, in the morning, I ran into Andrew Peepoy. And it was me, Barb. That's when me and Barb and Bill were walking down the aisles. And I usually get a commission from him, but I was planning on not getting a commission. And it was Sunday, and I wasn't going to ask him on Sunday to do a commission. But he talked me into it. So I ended up. And I had a brain fart at the time. I like to get Golden Age women from him, and I was trying to think of somebody to get, and he was going through the list, and I was like, "Have that one, have that one, have that one," you know, because he's drawn them for me in the past. And then he says, "Mary Marvel," and I'm like, "Oh hell yeah," because I'm on this Mary Marvel kick. And he said, I am not sure that I can get it done at the con, but you know, since we talk a lot on Facebook, I can mail it to you as soon as I'm done." But after the panel of the Wolfman and Perez panel, he texted me and said, "It's done." So he got it drawn. And when I was there talking to him, Bill went off, and he was going to get a page from somebody that he had supported a Kickstarter on, and he bought a page. And I was looking at I was talking to Andrew Peepoy about Mary Marvel covers, and he was giving me a suggestion on one of the Mary Marvel cover artists to start to look for. And he started to talk about some work that he might have had, and I don't want to go into that because that's his private stuff. But then he showed me a free he gave me a freebie from Shanda Fantasy Arts, and it was a Dick Tracy Meets the Spirit, a crossover special, and it was in black and white, and it's a freebie, has a bunch of Dick Tracy, it looks like newspaper strips by Joe Staton. And we started talking about that, and in the back he said, "I have a commission I did, like a little poster for this comic." And I looked at it and I was like, "Holy mackerel, it's beautiful." It had Dick Tracy coming in to rescue a very sexy woman who's tied up in a chair, and a gangster with a gun getting ready to shoot at Dick Tracy, and then the spirit crashing in from a wind one of those ceiling windows. And it was amazing. I was like blown away. And he goes, "I have that piece here. Do you want it?" And it was a big piece. So, how big was that piece, would you say it is, if you had to measure it?
11 by 17.
Huh? 11 by
11 by 17.
7? No, it's way bigger than 11 by 17. 11 by 17 is like this. I can't, I'd have to measure it. It is big. It's as big as my upper torso and a little bit longer. But it was in this comic book, the piece that he had drawn. He had the original piece, and he's like, okay, I'll give it to you for this. And it's Sunday, so he gave me a really good deal on it. So I ended up coming home with two pieces of art I didn't really plan for, but I am so glad that I did get them, because my Pep Boys collection just keeps on growing. And I do still follow the same policy, as I tend to hit up artists that I always get, like Drew Moss, Tom Scholey, Andrew Pepoy, and Shannon Gallant. Those are just a few, but those are ones that I have like the most commissions from, and if they're around, I continue to get more and more pieces. So yeah, that really worked out. And me and Bill then went down one aisle, like the aisles that had more like DC, Marvel, all the publishers. Big Dog Inc. was there, a lot of publishers. And we talked to one guy that was there, and I picked up some work from him. I bought all 8 issues of his comic book. And I was like asking him a lot of questions about like money, like how much it costs, how does this work? Because I wanted to get a gauge for how much, once all said and done, how much I'm going to lose on this comic book. So that was pretty helpful. But let me just tell you what these ones are. Kinetic, I bought 1 through 8. And I hear it's about like a gang war type superhero, and he goes into a area where he's not used to, and tries to take over this gang town. And then we talked to this creator that did Secrets and Shadows, and I bought issues 1 through 3. So I got a lot of like books that you get like an artist alley, but these were more like, hey, they have some published work, come get them. And they were focused on comics. So that was really cool. So got a lot of cool stuff. A couple of things I want to mention. So I got to meet Comic Book Page. Drew wasn't there, big disappointment. From Comics for Fun and Profit and Comic Book Page. John Mayo, I got to meet. Met a ton of people from Nerdy Legion. Nick, well, Martin, I've met before at Heroes Con. Jim, Dwan, Travis. Bill Bear, which I had met before. I'm missing Jay and Dennis. So, and of course, I forgot Ronnie. Ronnie was I spent a lot of time with Ronnie. So, everybody there from Nerdy Legion, and then I got to meet Eric from Cowabunga and James from Cowabunga. Jose Capatillo and John Davis, who I had known from Facebook and the Taylor Network. I met him because he shouted me out at the Perez panel. I guess he waited in line for a couple hours to get some books signed by Perez, who was sitting there right by Marv Wolfman. The lines for there was quite a few lines, but some of the biggest lines I've seen are Silvestri. For some reason, he is really popular over there. Liefeld, but he never was at his booth. Man, there were several artists and that had lines, but Chris Claremont had a really big line, and of course Perez had a huge line, one that was the biggest. And Marv Wolfman always busy that whole weekend. But he waited in line to get stuff signed. Like people were even stealing chairs from the snack area so they could sit on something as they waited in line very patiently to get something signed. Yeah, it was a really good con. Really fast and really relaxation, having a lot of the week there before the con and taking some time off on Saturday away from it. And it's just a good time. I highly recommend it if you want to go meet people and even meet creators. I would recommend Friday's your best day, followed by Sunday, and the last one being Saturday, which is kind of a hot mess. So I'd recommend going to scheduling panels on Saturday and maybe doing some stuff with your friends, like going to a long lunch and a long dinner, and then maybe going back. We went back on Saturday and just walked around for 45 minutes before it closed, and that was worth it, because by 5 o'clock on Saturday things start to die down, so you still get to do stuff. But anyway, I had heard from a post that they were canceling more trades from DC, which is getting ridiculous. And there was this article on Bleeding Cool I want to talk about really quick. Let me go to the article because some of it's false. I actually wrote Dan DiDio and he answered me. But let me go see where I posted this. Do, do, do. Oh, there it is. So there's a Bleeding Cool article, which they probably updated because they speculated on something that wasn't true. This is by Rich Johnston, and it was posted on March 27th, and that was just yesterday. And these were officially collections that have been canceled. Two of them were really big that I'm really pissed off about. They were Volume 3 of Batman Brave and the Bold, Bronze Age Omnibus. They canceled Volume 3, so we at least got 1 and 2, but we'll probably never see Volume 3. Justice League of America Bronze Age Omnibus Volume 3, we're not going to see. They canceled it. I assume it's because of low sales. Batman Faces in the Shadows, a DC Essential trade paperback, was canceled. Batman A Long Halloween DC Modern Classics hardcover was canceled, and Green Lantern Earth One Volume One trade paperback. So if you were getting the Earth One books in trade paperback, you're screwed with the Green Lantern, where I think they've released the Titans and Batman and Superman, maybe even Wonder Woman. And then they speculated that House of Secrets Bronze Age Omnibus Volume Two would be canceled, along with Joker Bronze Age Omnibus, which was a big one because they recolored a canceled comics cavalcade, or whenever they had that DC implosion. There was supposed to be a Joker number 10, and it was partially done. Well, they finished it, and it was going to be put in this omnibus. And then the last one is the DC Universe by Jack Kirby Bronze Age Omnibus. That one I would love to have, but I already have it because I bought all of the Jack Kirby omnibuses and Spirit Worlds and all that stuff. This one may have a few that aren't in those collections. Let's see, it has the Days of the Mob, Spirit World, The Demon had it his own omnibus, Sandman, OMAC, of course, which is my favorite. Our Fighting Forces got that, Superpowers stuff, first issue special. I don't think the ones it had were DC Comics Presents 84 and Richard Dragon Kung Fu Fighter number 3 and Weird Mystery Tales 1 through 3 and Forbidden Tales of Dark Mansion number 6. Those ones, I have all of Richard Dragon Kung Fu Fighter. I have all of DC Comics Presents in singles. I did purposely buy Weird Mystery Tales 1 through 3 because it had Jack Kirby stuff. And Forbidden Tales of Dark Mansion, I do not own. So that's one of all those books. I am missing that. Everything else I have in either collected edition or singles, like Demon, I have in singles. Sandman, I have in singles. OMAC, I have in singles. I still think I need some Our Fighting Forces in singles. I have all the superpowers. I have a full run of first issue special. A full run of DC Comics Presents, a full run of Richard Dragon, Kung Fu Fighter. I don't have a full run of Weird Mystery Tales, but I do have 1 through 3. And anyway, I kind of like wrote Dan a note saying, I hope you guys get a handle on what you're soliciting as far as collected editions, because a lot of people pre-order. And you sort of tie up our money for a couple months until the cancellation. If it's not coming in, it would be good to not pre-order your stuff if you're going to keep canceling books, because you tie up like $65 on an omnibus for a long time. In this particular case, though, DCBS refunded me just like 2 days after the announcement, so it wasn't so bad. But I got refunded back. Over $120 on collected editions that I wasn't planning on, but that would have been in my bank if I didn't buy that. It could be an investment, earning interest. So he said that he told me that he thinks DC cuts or all the announcements have been announced. And what you see solicited will be under control. And so I would imagine that because they solicited a new Bronze Age Doom Patrol, they already did the Silver Age Doom Patrol, that one is going to come out. Probably because they had to convince the AT&T people that it's good to have the Doom Patrol material out there. Because of the TV show or something. That's my guess. But anyway, I just wanted to clear up that. So they did cancel a few, but the other ones were rumors in the Bleeding Clue article, and they still plan on putting House of Secrets Bronze Age Omnibus Volume 2, Joker Bronze Age Omnibus, and the DC Universe by Jack Kirby Bronze Age Omnibus. I was just finishing this article to see if it said anything else. I did want to talk about that. So I think that's about it. And I'm going to talk about some weekly reads, which I've grossly become far behind in. And I think I put a note start here. So let me just double check on the website that I didn't cover February 18th. So bear with me, DC geekbrunchpodcast.com. I was going to put DC spot noise podcast.com. So that is through 217, and yep, this is from 218. So over the convention week, I read nothing except on the plane. I read like 6 issues of Conan, which I still have to remember what happened. I sort of remember what happened, but I want to put it in my notes because that was all I read that week. And all I read this week was two books. I'm getting caught up on Terrifics. That one is just wonderfully fun, and full of adventure. I just love what Jeff Lemire is doing with that Tom Strong and the Terrifics, and the Metamorpho backstory, especially with Java. Really cool stuff. And then I read Heroes in Crisis, thinking like, well, I read two that I thought didn't move the needle. A matter of fact, I wrote on Facebook that this is the third issue of Heroes in Crisis, that it's sort of dealing with the same themes but doesn't go nowhere. Like, you don't really learn much more. It's like if you're on an airplane and you're waiting to land and you can't land. So you're circling around another over and over again, seeing the same thing. And maybe the stewardess will come by and give you another bag of pretzels while you're waiting, and a refill on your soda. So there are some highlights that are pretty cool, but it didn't seem to like advance the story. So I'm hoping that the landing, sort of the next two issues, does something, so it can turn my opinion on this title. Because I thought there were some good issues in Heroes in Crisis, to be fair. It's just the last three have gotten sort of circular, and I personally don't think advanced the story. But that's all I read, and I'll be talking more about that in a future Weekly Reads. But let's get into February 18th of 2019 through February 24th. Again, the one is I hated it. Two is I didn't like it. Three is I liked it. Four is I really liked it. And five is I loved it. And for that week, I had total of 27 comics, pretty good distribution of books. One Zenoscope, one Titan, one Scout, nine Marvel, three Kickstarters, two Image, four Dynamite, five DC, and one Black Mask. We'll start at the 2 out of 5s, the ones I didn't like, but this is a hot book right now, believe it or not, especially the variant. Die, not die, 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 but Die number one. This is friends in high school meet to play a D&D game, and it turns out into an event that has them missing for 2 years. One of the players does not return when they actually return. When they are older, the major character gets a bloody die with his friend's face on the die. And what I mean by die, I mean like the die that you roll. And he gets the group back together to go back and try to save their friend and find out he is evil and he's in charge. So I think it was well put together, but it is in the vein of D&D, and I don't like D&D or role-playing games. A matter of fact, I never played them, and I have no interest to even attempt to play them. So that's why I didn't like it, but I will say that it was well told. It was a good story, and if you're into that, and if you didn't like it, you probably sell it. I won't sell my copy, but it tends to be worth more than cover right now, so it's a good time to sell it because it's a hot book. I think they're already on like the third printing, maybe fourth printing of this book. And if you have a first printing, maybe offload it. If you get it graded, it's even more hot. So I gave it a 2 out of 5, didn't like it. We then get into the 3 out of 5s. I had Silver Sable 18 and 19. Why am I reading Silver Sable? Because it's in the Venom Omnibus. And this was fun. Silver Sable, is a 3 out of 5, which means I liked it. Silver Sable is on a talk show circuit before her and the Wild Pack are paid to hunt down Venom. She has an appearance on Donahue, which is interesting. And then they go hunt down Venom in San Francisco and actually capture him. The book then crosses over with a Marvel event called Siege of Darkness, where demons are coming out of a cloud and they have to team up, Venom and Silver Sable, to escape them. And they make a pact to never hunt down Venom again. So, yeah, it was good, but I think these are two that I need to buy as well. We then have Venom Enemy Within, number 2 and 3. Venom and Morbius find out the goblins in San Francisco are linked to Mayor Palpatine, who witnessed the demonic ritual and took these beads of power. A demo goblin takes the beads and destroys the mayor and takes control of the goblins and leads them into the water to die. So demo goblin saves the day, demon goblin. And very nice Bob McLeod artwork with Bruce Jones writing. I enjoyed it. We then get into the 4 out of 5s from Zenoscope. We have Peekaboo number 4. The remaining survivors want to try and find the two women that are lost, but run into the killer savages. They do manage to kill a few, but one of the women dies that is captured, and only Amy is left to escape. Amy is the one daughter of the militaristic family, if you heard me talk about them before. The main group is hiding in a cave with the strange markings. So what this is it's like the hills have eyes, so there's these weird except instead of being like a weird family that was exposed to radiation, it's more like a bunch of cannibals that are in the mountains. And there's a tour guide who was killed, and this tour was supposed to lead them through and show them stuff on this hike. And they're now these cannibals are hunting down them. It just happens to be that one of the families that was on this tour was a militaristic family, and they came gun-toting prepared for this. So they got back to their vehicle and got weapons, and these creatures did capture one of their daughters. So and it is a mother, a single mother with her family. We then get into Venom the Mace, number 1 through 3. The Mace escapes from an organization called the Sunshine Group that is using him. He is starving, so takes on job protecting some underground people that are being attacked by Venom's people, which he does not know about. The lawyer friend of Venom tries to stop them from fighting each other, but does not succeed and is in danger once the Sunshine organization shows up. The lawyer friend of Venom tries to stop them from fighting each other, but does not succeed, and they have to work together to take down the organization. Venom promises to go after the people of this underground that were lying to him and banish them, but lies to the lawyer and actually kills them. So, underneath San Francisco, there were these people that were lying to Venom, and the lawyer says, "No, don't. You can punish them, but don't kill them. You know, let them live." And Venom killed them at the end of this series, The Mace. Really cool series, 1 through 3. Action Comics 996 through 999. This was me catching up on Action Comics, even though I started the Bendis run. This is Superman and Booster on a future new Krypton ruled by the Zods. It introduces the son of Zod. Meanwhile, Lois is trying to rescue her captured father. She uses connections she has gained over the years of reporting. Unknowingly, John has followed her and is watching the whole situation as she tries to rescue her dad. They find the father, but get gunned down when trying to escape. Lois's father does not know she is married to Superman, so is curious why she brought John to endanger his life. Skeets manages to save Booster and Superman as he takes over an Eradicator, and they go back in time, and Superman realizes Lois is in danger. Booster knows this. Lois, John, and her father are killed and goes back in time to save them, even though he's not supposed to change time. The next issue, General Lane comes to visit John and Lois after being saved by them, but they are constantly arguing until Clark comes and makes it peaceful for everyone. We then get into Silver Sable number 1 and 23. I can't remember. I think I read these not because they were linked to Venom, but because they were on Marvel Unlimited, so I read them digitally, even though I do own Marvel, Silver Sable number 1. This is a title I would like to finish. Let's see where I'm at with Silver Sable. I remember liking it quite a bit when it was first launched out of Spider-Man. Sable. So I have 1 through 12. I'm missing 13. And then I have everything up to 20. And I have 36, which came out much later. But I'm missing 13, 21 through 35. But anyway, in this one, she's recruiting the Wild Pack and introduces her aunt and uncle. They are looking for jobs, and her press agent reads off a list, and one of them is Hydra holding students hostage in the States, and her niece is involved because she's going to that school where they're holding those students hostage. She's reluctant to take the job because there will be no money involved. She goes down and finds Spider-Man and attack Hydra. The leader is an ex-lover of hers, of Silver Sable's. They defeat Hydra with the help of Wild Pack, but she is pissed because they showed up and costed her money. So she's upset that the rest of Wild Pack came and they weren't hired. The niece is saved and wants to come home, but she tells her to toughen up, Buttercup. She must stay at the school. She hires Foggy to help free some people of her country from wrongdoing. She goes to hire Matt, but this time he is believed to be dead. After Foggy takes the job and she is headed back to her limo, she was attacked by Deadpool because he was hired by Hydra to capture her, not kill her. Her and Daredevil fight off Deadpool and make him a counteroffer he can't refuse. He then calls off the attack. That leads us into the next 4 out of 5, which is Snap Flash Hustle. A model that is married but involved in a threesome gets involved in a snap picture modeling scam that is used to deliver drugs. She almost gets killed, but joins the group that is actually doing this drug scam. Then get into Action Comics number 1000. Some of these stories were a 5 out of 5, especially the opening story by Dan Jurgens as Metropolis was celebrating a Superman Day, and a lot of people were speaking on his behalf. Also, really enjoyed the Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason Vandal Savage story about Vandal using hypertime to trap Superman in various images of the past, but only failing because of the love of family. Really enjoyed John's telling of the story of a guy in the original green car in Action Comics number 1. The Brad Meltzer story was pretty amazing about a woman who's going to get shot in the head, helping Superman save her. Bendis's introduction to Rogel Czar was also really good. I think I would have given this a 5 out of 5 if it was just those, but there were some mediocre stories in here as well, at least to me. The next 4 out of 5 is a Kickstarter, The Fuhrer and the Tramp. It's Charlie Chapman, Hedy Lamarr, and Errol Flynn team up to take on Hitler before America gets involved in the war. It takes place during the filming of the Charlie Chaplin movie called The Great Dictator, which I would like to see, especially after reading this. 4 out of 5, Legends of Red Sonja number 5. The group that is hunting her loses another member who his whole life was seeking revenge for the death of the warrior mom, only to be beheaded by Red Sonja. The group runs into a theater group that had run into Sonja, and they poison another for Red Sonja, the dog man. They tell her where she is. They tell the group where she is for the final confrontation with Red Sonja and her allies. The legend stories were about the group of men and women seeking revenge for the death of a prince. This Legends of Red Sonja was freaking amazing. But it wasn't a 5 out of 5. It was the last 4 out of 5. We then get into the 5 out of 5s from Image Comics. We got Dead Rabbit number 2. Probably you'll never see number 3. The Dead Rabbit has to rob a bank for money for his wife, who is in the hospital. He recruits his old driver, who has a diabetic seizure and can't drive. So Dead Rabbit has to drive and crashes, sending his driver through the windshield. He then has to take his friend to the hospital, but the mob is there to see his friend. They think Dead Rabbit stole millions from them before he retired, but it was someone else, and we'll never know who it was. Too bad we'll never see the ending. We then have Lone Ranger, Volume 2, Number 20 and 22. The first story focuses on a well-known marshal that goes out to arrest a brother at an old farm. The brother shoots him through the door, but the marshal manages to still be alive and shoots the assailant. The other brother kills the marshal. The deputy gets the help from Lone Ranger and Tonto, but goes out by himself instead of waiting for Lone Ranger and Tonto. He gets captured or killed, and the Lone Ranger and Tonto go out to the farm to resolve the issues. The brothers get the upper hand on them, but the deputy saves them, but ends up dying from the bullet wound he has. The second story is about a son that wants to become a Texas Ranger, but because the first ride with his father resulted in a criminal killing his wife, kid, and dog before they could be rescued, he does not know if being a Texas Ranger is for him. The scene cuts to a very bad snowstorm, and the father is trying to protect his family and has to go look for help. He dies in the weather, but the Lone Ranger and the Tonto find the body. They go looking for the wagon. The wagon is designed as a shelter, but not working too well, and there is the mother and child and her mother. She hears the gunshots, and the daughter goes out to look for her father. She hands the baby to the grandmother. Lone Ranger and Tonto find the grandmother and child, but never the daughter. It was pretty heartbreaking. The next story involves a drought, and this story is desperate. So they gather the gold that they have in the town and hire a Indian woman to create a rain dance. After many days, it fails to rain, so they want to hang her. The sheriff, Lone Ranger, and Tonto try to protect her from a mob who wants to kill her. During the fight with Lone Ranger, the one of the townsfolk who lost his memory, it begins to rain and the fighting stops. They warn the woman about ever doing this again, but she says, "It always rains when I do my dance." And that was phenomenal. I'm just correcting a typo. Then getting to from, is this from Vault or Scout? I always get them confused. The Source, number 1. A teacher lives with his grandmother and they have a great relationship. An older woman of magic goes to him to try to get him to remember about the magic and his contributions to the world, but he thinks she is crazy and tries to turn her over to the police. She is being chased by an agent who appears to be a demon. He kills the man, Nana, and blows up the building, framing him as a terrorist, and is framing him for planting bombs at the schools. Actually framing our hero, the teacher. I didn't say that right. So this guy that's after him, the agent who's after this teacher, kills the man's grandmother, which he calls her Nana, and then blows up her building, framing him for being a terrorist. And then he's using magic to get him to blow his brains out, but is saved by the old woman's daughter that originally came to save him, who takes him to her mother for protection. We then get into another Kickstarter, The Empties 1 and 2. This is the second time I've read it, this time in print. The other time before that was digitally. This time, a man, well, actually, This is the same story. A man finishes paying his mortgage on his house and wants to celebrate with his wife. During this time, he hears on the radio about a zombie man that attacked police. He almost hits a zombie on his way home, but doesn't think anything of it. It was a zombie woman acting really strange, but he just thinks she might be on alcohol or something. When he gets home, his wife is in a robe and surprised to see him. He goes into the kitchen to start preparing a wonderful meal when she said she wants a divorce. He asks her if the guy is in the house, and he is. In other words, he's suspicious immediately, just by the way she's dressed, the way she's acting, and his response to her is, "He's in the house, isn't he?" Kind of like, "You have somebody here, that's why you're dressed like that." They get into a fight, him and the guy that's sleeping with his wife. And he takes that guy's car and absolutely destroys it. They fight some more, and his wife gets really sick. And the main character has to call 911, but they can't help because of the current outbreak situation. The other guy just kind of runs off. He doesn't really care. He acts distant from the woman once he finds out what's going on. Breakneck number one from Titan Comics. A man suspects his wife of cheating and uses her phone to set up a meeting with the guy she was with. He goes to kill him, and everything looks like this guy is having an affair with his wife. Turns out he was an agent that has a woman tied up in the next bedroom. The husband frees her, the woman in the next bedroom, and she might be involved in a terrorist act that's out to kill everyone. And so it's really twisted, a lot of twists and turns in this hard case crime book. So the 5 out of 5s for that week: Dead Rabbit number 2 from Image Comics, Lone Ranger volume 2 number 20 through 22 from Dynamite Comics, The Source number 1 from Scout Comics, The Empties number 1 and 2 from Kickstarter, and Breakneck number 1 from Titan Comics. I want to thank you all for listening. But before I actually close out, I want to get my phone and tell you what the hot 20 are. And let's see what, if I have any of them. So I'm going to go to my email. And let's start with the number one book. Naomi number 3 is hot, and it's selling out everywhere. And it's really hot on eBay. Raw copy selling for $27. Naomi number 3. Immortal Hulk number 15. This is also very hot. Matter of fact, all the Immortal Hulks are hot. But this is number 15. Number 3, I didn't even know what it was. It's called The Untamed, A Sinner's Prayer from Stranger Comics in 2011. The essential thing with this is it's going to be a show on HBO. And that's why that's hot. Number 4, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 26. This has the first appearance of Ultimate Taskmaster, and that's why it's hot. Taskmaster is going to be appearing in film, I believe, in some movie. Number 5, another Naomi book, Naomi number 2. $25 for a raw copy on eBay. Number 6 is owned by Naomi from DC Comics. 130 CGC graded, so it's really popular. Number 7, Avengers No Road Home. It's hot because Conan's being pulled into the 616 to lead into a book called Savage Avengers. Number 8 is Avengers 684, the first appearance of Immortal Hulk. Number 9 is Dark Red 1 in 10 Strowman variant from Aftershock. This seems to be a hit for Aftershock. Number 10 is Miss Marvel number 1 from 1977, probably because of the movie. Number 11 is The Eternals number 1 from 1976. Number 12 is Avengers Forever number 1 from 1998. I have that. So I have all of these so far except the 1 in 10 variant from Dark Red. And The Untamed, A Sinner's Prayer. So where did I leave off? Avengers Forever, number one, I own. There's supposed to be some ties into Avengers Endgame, so that one's hot. Young Avengers number one, it's hot because they think Kate Bishop's going to be in Endgame. Number 14, Naomi number one variant. This is a variant, lower print run. Number 15 is, I don't own this one. The other ones I own. Venom Sinner Takes All number three. It's hot because it has the first She Venom. Number 16 is the raw copy of Dark Red, which I do own. No variant, selling for $11 on eBay. Number 17, Incredible Hulk number 13. This is the first Devil Hulk who's making a return in Immortal Hulk. So look out for that. Amazing Spider-Man 375. This is the first appearance of Eddie's ex-wife, Anne Weying, who is that She-Venom. So that She-Venom is going to maybe be in a movie, but I think it's just going to be in the Venom series, and that's what makes her hot. Avengers 196 is the first appearance of the normal Taskmaster. That one I think I almost had, and I'm gonna have to check the database right now, because at one time I ordered it and then they couldn't fulfill it, and then I don't know if I ever went back and ordered it. I wished I did. We will see really quick. 176. I don't own it, son of a bitch. Although that doesn't say, maybe that's not 176. 196, sorry. And I don't own it. 195 I have, which is says it's the first appearance of Taskmaster, but I guess not. I guess it's 196 is hot because it's the origin of Taskmaster. Huh. Anyway, number 20 is Star Wars Tales of the Jedi number one, which I know I don't own, but I do own it, I believe, in Epic Collection. So I want to thank you for listening. Again, you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com and on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. Leave an iTunes review if you can. Let me know any topics you want me to talk about, any questions you might have, and I will cover them on this show. I have still some Nick top fives to go through, but I won't get them into this episode. I want to thank you for the summer for listening to the summary of C2E2, and encourage you to go to a convention to meet up your friends. That's where it's at. And thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.